ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय सोऽहं प्रियस्य सुहृदा परदेवताय लीलाकथास्थवनरसिंहवैरिंशगीता अञ्जस्थितर्म्यनुग्रणन् गुणविप्रमुक्तो दुर्गानिते पटलुकयुकालयहंससङ्गः O my Lord, O my Lord Narasimhadev, by engaging in your transcendental loving service in the association of devotees who are liberated souls, Hamsas, I shall become completely uncontaminated by the association of the three modes of material nature, and be able to chant the glories of your lordship, who are so dear to me. I shall chant your glories, following exactly in the footsteps of Lord Brahma and his disciplic succession. In this way, I shall undoubtedly be able to cross the ocean of nations. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. A devotee's life and duty are very well explained herein. As soon as a devotee can chant the holy name and glories of the Supreme Lord, he certainly comes to the liberated position. Attachment for glorifying the Lord by hearing and chanting the holy name and activities of the Lord, Sravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, certainly brings one to the position where material contamination is absent. One should chant the bona fide songs received from disciplic succession. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the chanting is powerful when one follows the disciplic succession. Evam parampara praptam imam rajar shaya vidhu. Manufacturing many ways of chanting will never be effective. However, chanting the song or the narration left by the previous acharyas, Mahajano yena katasa panta, is extremely effective. And this process is very easy. Therefore, in this verse, Prahlad Maharaj uses the word anja, easily, accepting the thoughts of exalted authorities through disciplic succession is certainly much easier than the method of mental speculation, by which one tries to invent some means to understand the absolute truth. The best process is to accept the instructions of the previous acharyas and follow them. Then God-realization or self-realization becomes extremely easy. By following this easy method, one is liberated from the contamination of the material modes of nature, and thus one can certainly cross the ocean of nations, in which there are many miserable conditions. By following in the footsteps of the great acharyas, one associates with the hamsas, or paramhamsas, those who are completely freed from material contamination. Indeed, by following the instructions of the acharyas, one is always freed from all material contamination, and thus one's life becomes successful, for one reaches the goal of life. This material world is miserable, regardless of one's standard of life. Of this, there is no doubt. Attempts to mitigate the miseries of material existence by material methods will never be successful. One must take to Krishna consciousness to become really happy. Otherwise, happiness is impossible. One might say that becoming advanced in spiritual life also involves tapasya, voluntary acceptance of some inconvenience. However, such inconvenience is not as dangerous as material attempts to mitigate all miseries.
I am very, very grateful to be with you on this very auspicious day. The appearance of Lord Narasimha. In the Lagu Bhagavatamrita, Srila Rupa Goswami tells that of the many, many avatars of the Lord, three are most prominent and most powerful, because they manifest the greatest of the opulences of the Lord. Lord Narasimhadev, Lord Ramchandra, and Lord Krishna. The story of Lord Narasimhadev is given in many of the Puranas. In fact, he appears in different ways, in different times throughout history. We are most concerned with the story spoken by Srila Shukadev Goswami in Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam brings the student through the experience of bhakti, culminating in the highest realm of pure love, Sri Vrindavan Dham. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu especially emphasized the reading of Srimad Bhagavatam. In fact, in the role of a devotee, his life personified at every moment the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. Pure unalloyed devotional service. He declared that Srimad Bhagavatam is the cream of all Vedic literatures, the crest jewel of all knowledge. Simply by understanding Srimad Bhagavatam, which was Vedavyas commentary of his Vedanta Sutra, which is the summary essence of all knowledge of the Vedas, one attains pure love of God. Nasta prayesya padreshu nityam bhagavati sevaya bhagavati uttama sloke bhaktir bhavati daishtiki. By regularly hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from the authorized sources and serving those devotees who are living Srimad Bhagavatam, the contaminations of the heart are removed, because Krishna is so pleased when we gain a taste for hearing his message, that he reciprocates and removes all obstacles from the path of pure devotional service. Krishne swadhamo bhagate dharma jnani bisoha kalona sha drishame sha purana kodunodita. Krishna descended into this world to annihilate the miscreants, protect the devotees, and reestablish the principles of true religion. That was at the very end of the Dwapara Yuga. After Krishna departed for his own abode, Kali Yuga entered into our universe. It could not stand in the presence of Krishna any more than darkness can exist in the shining illumination of light. Krishna Surya Samaya Hoya Andaka Yahan Krishna Tahanaya Mari Adhikar. Krishna is like the sun. Maya is like darkness. Maya cannot stand in the presence of the Son of Krishna. But Vedavyasa himself declares through the mouth of Shukadeva, that after Krishna departed from this world, he descended as the Srimad Bhagavatam to give light in the darkness of the age of Kali. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu declared Srimad Bhagavatam to be the literary incarnation of Krishna. Non-different than Krishna. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he relished the Bhagavatam unlimitedly from the lips of Gadadhar Pandit. Gadadhar Pandit is Srimati Radharani from Krishna's Leela. It was the special feature of his devotional service to continuously taste the sweet nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam. When Lord Chaitanya was living in Puri, in his Antya Leela, he there exhibited the highest ecstasies of love and separation. He literally revealed to the world the innermost heart's devotion of Srimati Radharani. Krishna descended as Lord Chaitanya, especially to taste the sweetness of Radha's love. To understand what it was about him that had inspired such love. In the Gambira, that is where the Lord tasted the sweetness of Radha's love to the highest degree. In fact, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, during the last 12 years of his life, he primarily isolated himself from the public, simply tasting the sweetness of Radha's love in separation from Krishna. There were several devotees that tasted Krishna consciousness in an unparalleled way and inspired Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Swarup Damodar Goswami, his kirtan would invoke the highest ananda in the heart of the Lord. Ramananda Rai, when he would speak about the beautiful pastimes of Braj Bhumi, the Lord would enter into a deep state of internal consciousness. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu primarily surrounded himself by these two devotees, just hearing the glories of the Lord and the chanting of the holy names. Paramananda Puri very much inspired the Lord by his meditation on the pastimes of the Lord, on the names of the Lord, on the lotus feet of the Lord, on the beautiful form of the Lord. Ramananda Rai is Vishakha Sakhi. Swarup Damodar is Lalita Sakhi. The two most intimate associates of Srimati Radharani in Sri Vrindavan. Paramananda Puri is Uddhav in Krishna Lila, the innermost best friend of the Lord, who Krishna loved so dearly, he sent to Vrindavan to taste the sweetness of the gopis' love. It was that Uddhava who understood the value of Braj Bhakti to such an extent that he was willing up to give up even his intimate friendship and lifelong companionship with Krishna in Dwarka to be a little plant on the ground of Vrindavan at the Govardhan Hill near Kusum Sarovar, so that the gopis may trample upon his head with their feet, and then he could absorb their mood of love and devotion. That is Paramananda Puri's meditation. And Srimati Radharani appeared as Gadadhar Pandit just near the seashore. There is a place called Yamatota where Yamaraj worshipped Lord Shiva. Just nearby, Lord Chaitanya entrusted Gadadhar Pandit with the seva of Tota Gopinath. How he worshipped that deity with such love. Supreme. But his main form of worship was reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. Every day Lord Chaitanya would come to hear Gadadhar Pandit recite the Bhagavatam, and they would discuss it. Several hours. It was his regulation. Vrindavan Das Thakur informs us that when Gadadhar Pandit would read the story of Dhruva Maharaj or Prahlad Maharaj, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would be in such ecstasy, overwhelmed with love. He didn't say, "Gadadhar, read faster. I want to get to the Ras Lila." Now, the story of Prahlad Maharaj is many chapters. It's practically an entire volume. After completing the entire story, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would say, "Read it again, and again, and again." Gadadhar Pandit and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would relish the story of Prahlad's love for Lord Narasimhadev and his mercy upon his father 100 times before they would go on to the next story. For several reasons. One, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he relishes with great ecstasy hearing about the qualities of his devotee Prahlad, who surrendered everything for him selflessly. Two, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, according to Swarup Damodar Goswami, he came for the special mission that no other incarnation have ever given, to elevate people of this age of Kali into the mood of the gopis' loving devotional service in Parakya Ras. Special feature of Mahaprabhu. He's giving entrance into the Parakya Ras of gopis for the people of Kali Yuga. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu declared that there is no worship of anyone, anywhere, that is as pure and as elevated as that of the gopis of Braj. They are the supreme devotees. In Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's line, those who take sannyas, who renounce everything of this world, their duty in life is to take shelter of the mood of the love of the gopis. That is renunciation, according to Mahaprabhu. So in order to bring the people to that level, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is putting such great emphasis on the story of the determination of Dhruva and the innocent, sweet faith, devotion, and selfless service of Prahlad. One who follows in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, can attain the greatest treasures of the Lord's mercy. Srila Prabhupada, for many, many days, weeks, and months, he often spoke on the teachings of Prahlad, the prayers of Kunti. It prepares our hearts and prepares our minds with the pure bhava, the aspiration for unconditional service of the Lord. We may want to be residents of Vrindavan, but that is a very high platform. We understand this through Brihad Bhagavatamrita and other such shastras. But you actually have to qualify yourself. Are we as fearless as Prahlad? Do we have the faith of Prahlad? Do we have the absolute dedication and obedience to our guru as Prahlad under all circumstances? Are we willing to welcome difficulties with a happy heart like Prahlad? Is the Supreme Personality of Godhead willing to appear in this world for us like Prahlad? If not, we should not jump over his head. We should fall under the dust of his lotus feet and follow in his footsteps. That is why Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu put so much happiness and emphasis on this story. Lord Narasimhadev appears today. We think about him every day. And actually, the Lord is unlimited. beyond the limitations of time, place, and circumstances. Factually, every time we call out Lord Narasingha Dev's name with faith and devotion, the Lord appears within our hearts. Every time we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, or the names of Krishna, Krishna and Radharani appear, with all their incarnations included. Narasingha Dev also. But on these particular holy days, there is a special mercy where the Lord gives us the opportunity to access Him and His mercy by absorbing the whole day in remembering Him, praying for Him, hearing about Him, and chanting His names. In today's verse, Prahlad Maharaj is offering his heart to Lord Narasingha Dev. O my Lord Narasingha, by engaging in your transcendental loving service in the association of devotees who are liberated souls, I shall become completely uncontaminated by the association of the three modes of material nature. The simple philosophy that is often spoken: what we associate with, we become. By associating with pure souls, we become purified by the impurities of material desires, inspired by the three modes of material nature. And then I am able to chant the glories of your Lordship, who are so dear to me. I shall chant your glories following exactly in the footsteps of Lord Brahma and his disciplic succession. In this way, I shall undoubtedly be able to cross the ocean of nations. In Srila Prabhupada's beautiful purport, he is emphasizing that the path of perfection is Mahajano Yena Gatasa Panta. Prahlad Maharaj is Mahajan. Following in his footsteps is the only way. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quoted this verse often. There's no other way. You can study all the Vedic literatures. You could perform great, great tapasyas. You can give much in charity. You can perform thousands of Ashwamedha yajnas and other types of yajnas. But you'll never know Krishna unless you follow in the footsteps of the great souls. And from how to practically do that? To follow Prahlad means to follow in the footsteps of those who are in disciplic succession. It's very simple. To be the servant of the servant of the servant is the path to the highest truth. So let us hear, according to our disciplic succession, the great story of Prahlad, so that we can follow in his footsteps. Because anyone who takes shelter of Prahlad becomes dearmost in the heart of Lord Narasingha Dev. The story begins in the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, wherein Parikshit Maharaj asks Shukadev Goswami, the Supreme Lord is impartial. Krishna tells in Gita, Samoham sarvabhutesho namedveshostinapriya. I'm equal to everyone. I'm not partial to anyone. But one who surrenders to me, I reciprocate accordingly. Now, Pariksha Maharaj is asking, if the Lord is impartial to everyone, why so many stories you're telling where the Lord protects the demigods and destroys the demons? How is that impartial? Why does he side? Shukadeva Goswami, he was very happy, proclaimed that this is an excellent question. When the sages of Naimasharanya asked their questions to Suta Goswami, he glorified them. Munayasaru prishtoham bhavadbir lokamangalam yatkrita krishna samprasno yenatma suprasidati. Your questions are glorious because they are in reference to Krishna. Therefore, they are for the ultimate benefit of all living beings. Any question that helps other people remember Krishna in a positive way is an excellent question, because the answers bring about the highest benediction. Shukadeva Goswami said formally, just after the Rajasuya Yajna, Yudhisthira asked Narada Muni a question that will bring light to yours. At that time, Yudhisthira inquired from Narada, what I saw with my eyes was inconceivable. Shishupal, the son of Damagosh, everyone knows about him. He was the personification of envy to Krishna. He hated Krishna. He wasn't just indifferent to Krishna. He wasn't just an atheist who defied God. He was 24 hours a day blaspheming God. He hated Krishna on every level. From his earliest childhood, the first words out of his mouth were blasphemies of Krishna. And he never stopped. But then, at the peak of his envy of Krishna, his mind was somewhat distracted because Rukmi was arranging his marriage to Rukmini, who was so beautiful and so chaste and so submissive and so full of all good qualities. And he was arranged to marry Rukmini. So perhaps his envy of Krishna was a little bit diverted to the promise of marrying this most beautiful princess in all of creation, who was an ocean of good qualities. And obviously, when you're going to marry someone like Rukmini, your heart is palpitating with eagerness day by day. And then the marriage day comes, the culmination. And on the day of the marriage, right in front of all of his family members and his friends and his subjects and his soldiers and other kings who he was very eager to impress, Krishna just appeared on a chariot right when Rukmini was walking out of the temple of Parvati to be betrothed with Shishupal. Krishna just appeared, picked her up, put her on the chariot, and took off. And then there was a big battle. Krishna was victorious. Balaram came and helped. Shishupal was completely defeated. Total humiliation by the person he was the most envious of, by the person he was always trying to discredit as useless and weak and nonsense and low class and everything else. He takes Rukmini to Dwarka and marries her. Hare Krishna. So what do you think happened to his envy after that? Practically is to the degree we... For us little jivas who are not very advanced, to try to understand the envy of Shishupal is almost like trying to understand the love of a pure devotee. It was beyond ability to calculate. And in the Agra Puja of the Rajasuya Yagya, Yudhisthira Maharaj, actually, what a devotee he was. He performed this whole Rajasuya Yagya just to glorify Krishna. Because during this particular puja, the most important person in the whole world is worshipped. And he wanted everyone to know that Krishna is the most important person. What a great soul. His Rajasuya Yagya was actually for preaching purposes. That's all. Sometimes we do things indirectly to preach also. He just wanted to bring all the great kings from all over the world together so that they had to worship Krishna. They didn't know that that was coming. And Shishupal especially was taken by surprise by this. And in front of everybody, why are you worshiping Krishna? And he blasphemed. Now, previously, Shishupal's mother, who was Krishna's aunt, or here in India you say auntie, she... I don't know why that's so funny. Krishna. She prayed to Krishna, please don't kill my son, even though he's so blasphemous of you. He said, I will, as long as he doesn't exceed 99 without a break. He could blaspheme 99, even 100 times, but if he goes beyond 100... without at least taking rest for a little gap, then I must kill him. So he counted. He went up to 100, and then he took a little rest, a few seconds, and he continued again. That was his life. But on this day, when Krishna was being honored and worshipped by everyone, he lost count. And Krishna was just count. But Krishna just doesn't lose count of anything. Vedaham samatitani varatamanani chaujuna bhavashani jabhutani mamtu vedana kashtana. Krishna knows everything, always, everywhere, about everyone. You may lose count of how many rounds you chant, but Krishna does not. We should be in a reverse mood of Shishupal when we're in this way. Shishupal understood, if I go beyond 100, I die. So I count carefully. We should understand, if we go below 16, spiritually, I'm dying. So we should count very carefully if we're initiated devotees. So Krishna, of course, Bhima and others, they just wanted to tear this man apart. But Krishna just wanted to keep peace. And also, Krishna kept Bhima and everybody else from causing harm to Shishupal because Krishna loved Shishupal. He really did. He loved Shishupal unconditionally. Nobody could love Shishupal more than Krishna. If anybody else killed Shishupal, he would have probably had to go to hell for a long time for all his offenses. But if Krishna killed him, he he would be liberated. So Krishna counted. Sudarshan chakra. Shishupal's head fell to the ground. It was a great sensational performance by Krishna. Yudhisthira Maharaj is wondering, how is it? I saw the soul of Shishupal come out of his body in the form of a brilliant light and enter into your body. That means he merged into your form. That means he's liberated. What yogis and demigods and other such great pundits, what they struggle and strive to do through regulative principles, through religious acts, through chanting of mantras, to performing of yajnas, birth after birth after birth, and they still cannot achieve, Shishupal got liberated, mukti. The enemy of Krishna, Krishna gave. How is that? Narada Muni was very happy to speak on this particular subject. Yudhisthira said, Shishupal got liberated, but King Vena went to hell. They were both enemies. Doesn't that show partiality? Why Vena had to go to hell and Shishupal got liberated? How is Krishna impartial? Narada Muni told that Krishna is everyone's well-wisher. For him, he is beyond the modes of material nature. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadiradir Govinda Sarvakaranakaranam. His body is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. He's the Supreme Lord of all lords. He's the source of everything, the cause of all causes. Therefore, the dualities of material nature can never affect Krishna. If someone praises Krishna, or someone blasphemes Krishna, Krishna is neither elated or depressed by either one. For him, blasphemy and praise makes no difference, on the mundane platform especially. Krishna is everyone's loving well-wisher. He'll simply give to everyone what's best for them. If you blaspheme Krishna, what's best for you, the prescribed medicine for you, is to suffer from that blasphemy and maybe even go to hell. The soul is eternal. That's what you need. And if a person praises Krishna, then Krishna gives you what you need there, what's good for you, by reciprocating with your love. So everything Krishna does is all good. But if one remembers Krishna, one becomes purified. To the degree one is absorbed in Krishna, Krishna gives himself. Narada Muni explained there are five special ways of absorbing yourself in remembering Krishna. Somehow, if you remember Krishna, you're purified. The gopis, they absorb themselves constantly in remembering Krishna through kama, through divine love. And Kamsa, he was 24 hours a day absorbed in remembering Krishna in fear. The Yadus, they were absorbed in Krishna, remembering him always through family relations. The Pandavas, through affection. Shishupal, 24 hours a day was absorbed in remembering Krishna through envy, enmity. And then Narada Muni said, and ordinary devotees like us, we're absorbed in Krishna through devotional service. But any way you're absorbed in Krishna, you become purified. Now, Maharaj Vena, he was wicked, he was sinful, but he never remembered Krishna. That was the difference. Shishupal was as wicked as Vena, but he was always remembering Krishna. And Vena was always forgetting Krishna. So he had to go to hell. Why? Because Krishna loves him. It's the best thing for him. Suhrida Sarvabhutanam. Krishna is everyone's well-wisher. Narada Muni continued that Shishupal and his cousin brother, Dantavakra, were formerly associates of the Lord in Vaikuntha. Yudhisthira wondered, how is that possible? How can someone from Vaikuntha, who has a spiritual body, come to this material world and become an enemy of the Lord? I don't believe this. Please explain. Narada Muni began the story. Once upon a time, the four Kumaras, in their forms as five-year-old children, clothed only in the four directions, they came to Vaikuntha, very eager to see Lord Narayan. As they were coming closer and closer, they saw the beauty of Vaikuntha, and it was absolutely breathtaking. They went through the first gate, the second gate, the third gate, fourth gate, fifth gate, sixth gate. They came to the seventh gate of the kingdom of God when they were greeted by two gatekeepers, Jai and Vijay. Kind of like the immigration. But you have to have a visa of pure, unmotivated, unalloyed love in order to enter. So Jai and Vijay saw these little children. What qualifications do they have? He said, go back. You cannot enter Vaikuntha. Grow up. Become purified, then come back. Now Jai and Vijay, they were very, very disturbed. I'm sorry, the four Kumaras, because they were so eager to see Krishna. And actually it was Krishna in their heart that made them so disturbed, because he had a plan. It was actually Krishna in the heart of Jai and Vijay that made them judge the four Kumaras, because he wanted them to, they were puppets, instruments, and he wanted them to serve in a special way. So the four Kumaras, what is this? You are judging us on the basis of our bodily appearance? You're not looking into our hearts, you're just seeing our bodies? And you're becoming angry? On the basis of these physical designations, you're in ignorance. This is all material conceptions. You should not be here in Vaikuntha, at the gate. You should go where you belong, to the material world. We curse you to fall into material existence. Jai and Vijay realized they made a big mistake. But it was too late. Jai and Vijay fell at the feet of the four Kumaras, begging for forgiveness. And at that time, Lord Narayan, along with Lakshmi, came running to the gate. And he said to the four Kumaras that actually any offense or wrongdoing that is done by the servant, the blame comes to the master. They are my servants. Therefore, I am responsible to take the reaction of their offenses. You can cut off my arms to atone for the offense that they have committed to you. You have cursed them to go into the material world. Let them come back quickly. Let them take three births as demons. They fell from the gateway of Vaikuntha. Narada Muni explained how their first birth, the sons of Kashyapa and Diti, became Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. Hiranyaksha was killed by the Lord who incarnated as Varaha, the boar. And Hiranyakashipu, so wicked and cruel, he blasphemed and tried to kill his own son, Prahlad. And the Lord, in order to protect his devotee, came as Lord Narasimhadev to destroy him. In the second verse, they took birth as the sons of Vishrada and Keshini, Ravana and Kumbhakarna. And Sri Ramchandra descended to liberate them. And now they have come again as Shishupal and Dantavakra. And the three births as demons are finished. So what you saw is Shishupal coming back into Krishna. Yudhisthira Maharaj was struck with wonder. You told me, he said, that Hiranyakashipu tried to kill his own little 5-year-old son? Nobody treats a little boy like that. A father? Why? Why did he torture his own son? Narada Muni explained that after Lord Varahadev killed Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu was outraged. Hiranyaksha was the younger brother of Hiranyakashipu. They were born just seconds apart, but still, even that makes you a younger brother. In fact, it is said that Hiranyaksha came out first and Hiranyakashipu second. That makes him the younger brother. Now, by material, worldly sense, it makes him the older brother because he came out first. But according to the Shastras, whoever enters into the womb first is older. Because Hiranyakashipu entered the womb first and Hiranyaksha second, he came out first. Because birth is actually at the time of conception. So according to Shastra, there is no justification or logic behind killing a child in the womb. Karmically, it's no different than killing a newborn baby. Hiranyaksha did not compete with his brother. There was culture even amongst the Rakshasas in those days. If you take some of the big people in today's world, especially in India, yes, big business people, brothers, father works so hard to build up an empire, then he leaves, and then the brothers are fighting. And then they have to they're fighting in courts, they're fighting socially, they're fighting personally, and then they have to divide their assets and all that kind of stuff. Very sad. But according to tradition, the younger brothers follow the older brother and respect him. That's tradition. Now, Hiranyaksha was a lot more powerful. He could have conquered the world himself. He did. He could have conquered the entire universe and been the king. But he never considered that. He conquered the entire universe and gave it all to his older brother, Hiranyakashipu, just to please his brother. Culture, even within the Rakshasa dynasties. We could learn a lot, even from Rakshasas. They have their principles that they live by. Yes, he conquered everywhere the universe, gave it all to his brother, and just kept going for more and more and more. And he went to Varuna. And he was so arrogant. He fell at the feet of Varuna just to mock him and said, "Oh, you are so great. You are such a worshipable god. I beg one benediction from you. Fight me in battle." Hare Krishna. Varuna was disgusted with the arrogance of this Rakshasa. He said, "I'm a very old man. I cannot fight someone like you. It's not a match. But there is someone. If you're really serious about fighting, Vishnu has appeared in a boar incarnation. Fight him. And soon you will be a dead carcass, which will be food for dogs and jackals." Ah, that was a good challenge for Hiranyaksha. So he went searching for Vishnu. It is said he plundered the universe so much. He took all the gold out of the earth. Yes, we see there's gold leafing going on here. Gold is something very nice if it's used for Krishna. But if it's used for ourselves, then we see what happens with Hiranyaksha. He plundered the gold for himself. And because of the ecological imbalance, the earth went to the bottom of the Garbhodak ocean. The demigods approached Brahma. What to do with the earth? Brahma was thinking about it, meditating. The Lord came out of his nose in the form of a boar, the size of the upper portion of thumb. Then he grew into a mountain size. Then he lashed his tail and he roared. And they understood, Vishnu has appeared. He dove down to the ocean, picked up the earth with his tusks. Very gently, very gently. Bhumi Devi was so happy, she became his consort, Bhuvaraha. And then he lifted, and as he was coming up, Hiranyaksha could not tolerate that this animal is trying to undo what I have done. He blasted him, "You amphibious beast, creatures like you are fit to be destroyed. How dare you? I challenge you to a fight." Varaha Dev just ignored him and put the earth in earth planet in a safe place and then came back to fight. It was a great battle. But in the end, although Hiranyaksha was manifesting unbelievable mystic powers due to the yogic siddhis he had achieved. Such strength. But Lord Varaha, at a certain point, played with him and then just tapped him just near his ear with his hoof. And Hiranyaksha just trembled like a tree uprooted from the ground by a high wind and fell down dead. Arivo. All the demigods were praising, showering flowers, offering prayers. But Hiranyakashipu was outraged. Poor Rushabhanu and Diti, the mother and wife of Hiranyaksha. They could not see that he was an evil, horrible person. They loved him. Love is blind. Diti's not a demon. Diti's a very virtuous, pious lady. She's the wife of Kashyapa Muni. Why does she love Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu so much? Because she's the mother. She just can't see bad in them. And even if she does, it's not very important. It's motherly love. Very unconditional. Very, very unconditional in that sense. So Diti was weeping, and Rushabhanu, the wife, was very much, now I'm a widow. What will become of my life? And all the other children and relatives. Hiranyakashipu, although he was angry as fire, his heart was burning with vengeance for Vishnu. He spoke beautiful philosophy to pacify his relatives. He explained how the soul is eternal. This material body is always changing, but the soul is permanent. And the relationships we make within this body, birth after birth after birth, is like a traveler. A traveler is walking, 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 and he comes to an inn or a hotel and takes some food and drink and meets so many people there and makes friends. And then each traveler separates and goes their own way, not to meet again. And they go to a next hotel, and they meet new people, and they drink and they eat together, and they make friends, and then they go to the next. In the same way, we are traveling from place to birth after birth after birth. We have mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers and friends and relatives and everybody else. And then at the time of death, the soul simply goes out of that particular hotel and travels to another one. So why should we lament? Then he gave a story of how Yamaraj himself instructed some queens, just like you, whose husband died, with the truth of the eternal soul. The king of the province of Ushinara was Suyagya. He was a powerful warrior. Once on the battlefield, he was slain. He laid there. His beautiful crown and ornaments were all in shambles. His hair was all disheveled. He laid there dead. But because he died in the battlefield as warrior, even if his corpse had teeth clenched with anger, the wives of Suyagya were beating their breasts with anguish and crying, letting their hair down. Oh, they were so much in distress. Oh, our husband, you are our protector. You are our life and soul. You are our everything. How will we survive without you? Why is providence so cruel upon us? Meanwhile, it was time for the funeral. And the wives were holding on to his body. They wouldn't let go. Nobody could take them away. So Yamaraj appeared in the form of a small boy. Srila Prabhupada explains in this regard that people are very much attracted when a small child speaks philosophy. For old men like us speaking philosophy, people are not so attractive, often, unless they're really serious. But we have seen that sometimes we would do preaching programs, lecturing to, you know, the secular world, and people listen. out of politeness. But if you take a little boy who speaks a few verses from Bhagavad Gita and explains it, they're on the edge of their seats listening. Their hearts are totally open, receptive as anything. Because it's just so fascinating. How can a little child speak philosophy? It goes beyond sectarian boundaries when a child speaks. Because nobody's intimidated or nobody's on the defense when a child speaks. If someone like Radha Kund gives a lecture, Prabhu, people who are not inclined toward Krishna consciousness are saying, what is this? They close themselves off. When Gauranga Prabhu is on Atma television, devotees are very happy watching. But certain atheistic types of people or people from another religion who don't believe in anything else, they see, they're angry. Turn the channel. Yes? But a little boy or a little girl, everybody, let me hear what they're saying. Oh, they're talking about Krishna. It doesn't matter what they're talking. Let me hear. They have to listen. It's very, it goes beyond sectarian boundaries when a little child speaks. So Yamaraj is a Mahajan. He's very intelligent. So he knew if I go and start preaching to these wives, everyone's already preaching to the wives. And they can't hear anybody. But I know how they'll listen. So he came as a little boy. He said, who are you? I'm just wandering around. What are you doing? What is this, Maya? Why are you holding on to your husband like this? Don't you understand that the soul is eternal? Why are you wasting your life away and trying to hold on to something that's already gone? Let me tell you a story. There was a hunter who was very eager to catch birds and kill them. And he set out his net. And there was two Kulinga birds, husband and wife, who were very much attached to each other. And they came upon the net. The wife fell into the net. The husband saw that. She was trapped. He couldn't believe what was happening. Why is this happening to me? Why is destiny so cruel? How will I live without my wife? She's my better half. She's done everything for me. Her sweet words, her kind service, her loving embrace. How will I live without it? Why not take my own life? Why my wife's life? And what about our children? Our little bird children. Their wings aren't even big enough to fly. Who will take care of them? While I'm out doing my work and my business every day, who's going to take care of the little babies? How will I live? He was lamenting for a long time, screaming and crying. The hunter saw him. The hunter very silently approached, drew back his bow, released an arrow and pierced Mr. Kulinga head. The end. So little boy Yamaraj said, why? You see, you're like this Kulinga bird, so foolish. Your husband is gone. His soul is eternal. He's gone to his next destination. But human life is very, very precious, very, very valuable. You should take shelter and make best use of the time you have in your human life. And don't lament over that which is inevitable. In this way, the wives became pacified and enlightened. And they allowed the funeral ceremony to continue. And through this wonderful narration, Hiranyakashipu enlightened his relatives. After they were pacified, he approached his associates. He was in a different mood with them. He was outraged. He said to his associates that my brother was killed by Vishnu. We must declare war against Vishnu and everything in relation to Vishnu. He knew that it was his job to kill Vishnu. And he sent his associates to kill everything in relation with Vishnu. Go! Wherever there is worship of the Lord, stop it. There will be a law. No worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Wherever there is temples, burn them down. Wherever is protection of cows, kill the cows and burn down the goshalas. Wherever there's yajnas being performed, stop the yajnas. Wherever there's piety or charity, destroy it. Go everywhere. Cause havoc. Kill the Brahmins. Kill Brahminical culture and establish the rule of my supremacy. Oh, his Rakshasa army and the Daityas, they went down and they started destroying everything. They caused havoc in the universe. Meanwhile, Hiranyakashipu, he understood what was required for him to achieve his goal. He required immense supernatural power to conquer everything and everyone. He went to Mandarachala, the Mandara mountain, to perform tapasya. He stood on his toes and lifted his arms straight up and stood with a burning meditation of pleasing Lord Brahma to receive his benedictions. He stood there for about 100 celestial years. What's that, about 36,000 years? Something? Now, that may not sound like such a difficult thing, standing on your tiptoes with your arms raised. Almost all of us could do that. Yes? Do it for 1 hour. Do it for 1 day. 1 week. How many think you can do it? When we're just chanting japa, I mean, not japa, kirtan. When we're doing kirtan, we raise our arms, and after a month or two, we have to put them down. Yes? That's why we, you know, when we're hearing, we put our hands like this, and when we're chanting like that. That's because we can't keep them like that. It's too difficult. 100 years, celestial years. And he didn't drink a drop of water or eat a granule of food. And no matter what happened, he didn't stop. Even if there was itching. Everyone knows how obnoxious itches is. Sometimes we're trying to look like we're really good yogis in front of others and and then there's an itch. And it doesn't go away. It just keeps getting more and more intense. And ultimately we have to be honest, go like this. Or if we don't want to be completely honest, we make it like we're doing something else. It's like... But somehow our intelligence is fully utilized to scratch that itch. Even if it's incognito. Now, Hiranyakashipu, there were so many itches. Not only itches, you know, mosquitoes are biting, and he had ants. The kind of ants that like to eat people. Millions of ants eating his flesh. They ate every morsel of his flesh, every morsel of his fat, and drank every drop of his blood. And he stood like this, just tolerating it. Tapasya. Tamastatikshasvabharata. Krishna says in Gita, learn to tolerate the impulses of the senses. Hiranyakashipu did that. And what was very difficult, sometimes we don't think of it this way, but Hiranyakashipu was really lusty. He was really a lusty man. For that 100 years, he followed strict celibacy. He didn't even look at the opposite sex. I mean, he really restricted himself on every level. Restricted his tongue, restricted his genitals, restricted everything. Absolute denial for 100 celestial years. And because of the power of his tapasya and this immense determination, his body was covered by an anthill. There was not even any air to breathe. Fire emanated from his head, started scorching the higher planets. It wasn't like the fire in this world where you light a match and it goes out of control. This was mystic fire. It's a whole different type of fire. The demigods, they were practically suffocating by the smoke of that fire and the heat. They didn't know what to do. They didn't know. They went to Lord Brahma. They approached him and explained that only you could save us. This Hiranyakashipu, he has a very specific mission. He has seen how you have attained the post of being the supreme created being within the universe. You attained that post through tapasya. He wants to take your post. Therefore, he's following in your footsteps to perform tapasya. Now, this is amazing. Prahlad Maharaj is saying, if you want to be Krishna conscious, you have to follow in the footsteps of Brahma through disciplic succession. Yes? So Hiranyakashipu, he wants to attain his goal by following in the footsteps of Brahma. But the difference, like a Mayavadi and a Vaishnav. Sometimes we do similar things, but for different purposes. A Mayavadi will chant the holy names, will read the holy scriptures, will perform puja, will follow 4 regular principles, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating, be very charitable, be very kind to others, to become God. A Vaishnava will do all those things for the purpose of eternal service to God. That is the difference between Mayavadi and Vaishnava. Now, Prahlad is following in the footsteps of Brahma to become an eternal servant of the Lord and of Lord Brahma himself. And Hiranyakashipu is following in the footsteps of Brahma by performing the same, by tapasya, for the purpose of taking over the post of Brahma, to become Brahma. And it is in this light that sometimes the Vaishnavacharyas explain that Mayavad philosophy is demoniac. Because it's in the line of Hiranyakashipu in spirit. I'll do it to become, not to serve. He's performing this tapasya to take your position of being all-powerful and control others. And you know what he wants to do once he attains that position? His goal. He wants to make a particular contribution to universal creation that will put him down in history. He wants to reverse the system of piety and impiety. He wants to have that power. That people will enjoy great prosperity if they sin, and they will suffer miserably if they do pious things. That's how he wants the world to operate. And that is his goal in life. Hare Krishna. Lord Brahma, he descended on his swan carrier to the Mandara mountain. But he couldn't find Hiranyakashipu. Couldn't find anything. But finally, after looking for quite a while, he saw this big, big anthill, and he saw this smoke and fire coming from the top of it. And he realized he's in that anthill. So Lord Brahma, he removes the anthill, and Hiranyakashipu, he sees him, nothing but a skeleton. This was the power of his tapasya. He could keep his life airs flowing through his bones. Lord Brahma took his kamandalu with celestial water, sprinkled it on the skeleton, and restored Hiranyakashipu's body. But now it was effulgent, full of potency, full of mystical cities. Hiranyakashipu finally put his arms down and came down off his toes and looked at this new body he had. With folded palms, he offered his dandavats to Brahmaji and offered prayers. You are the supreme created being within this universe. There is no one equal to or greater than you within this whole universal creation. I bow down and worship you. And I ask you for the benediction of immortality. Lord Brahma responded, I cannot give you something I do not have. I may live a very, very long life by calculation of everyone else around, but even I have to die. And according to the karmas I create, I will go to another place. Hiranyakashipu was very intelligent. He wanted to become immortal somehow or other. So he asked for the benediction. Then give me this. I will not be killed, either inside or outside any residence. I will not be killed in either day or night. I will not be killed either in the ground, in the water, or in the sky. I will never be killed by any weapon, by any man or animal, demigod or demon. I will never be killed by any created living being within the universal creation. And grant me the benediction that I will have soul lordship over all beings, and that I will be endowed with all the mystic powers. Lord Brahma put out his hand and bestowed the benediction. So be it. Hiranyakashipu, his heart overflooded with false pride. He attained his goal. Who could possibly stop him now? He terrorized all directions. And through his cruelty and his unquenchable anger, he conquered all the worlds up to the highest planet of Swargaloka. He took the throne of Indra. He was so powerful that the demigods, they couldn't even look at him. His anger was too much. Just like you saw, it was Radha Gopinath Prabhu playing Hiranyakashipu, yes? We saw that anger. Did you see it? Quite fearful, was it not? I think Hiranyakashipu partially expanded into Radha Gopinath. He was like a vaish of today. But that anger was not from his heart. Radha Gopinath Prabhu, his heart is full of love for Govinda Prabhu. He honors him, he respects him, he's like a blade of grass in his relation with Govinda Prabhu. So he was just pretending to be angry. But Hiranyakashipu, he was angry. He was motivated with hate, envy, greed, lust, pride, illusion. All the three modes of material nature were, I mean, goodness was not there, I'm sorry. Passion and ignorance were just fully charging him with the power of the lower qualities. It is said he, when he was angry, if he raised his eyebrow, the rishis, the sages, the demigods, they would tremble in fear and hide. He had all the demigods coming to him and bowing down. No one dared to fight him. In fact, he was so cruel. Although the demigods were bowing down and with folded hands, obediently following every order that he gave them, he was continuously chastising them, intimidating them, and making their lives totally miserable just to show his superiority. Everyone in the universe except Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva was the obedient servant of Hiranyakashipu. Even the great sages and rishis like Narada were bowing down to him. He controlled all the departments of universal creation. And the way everything he wanted is what came about. For a while, he was an amazing ruler. The earth was providing abundant crops without even being plowed. The trees, every tree was just stocked and full with ripened fruits and flowers. The wind, whatever velocity he wanted the wind, that's the way the wind blew. If he wanted fragrant flowers in the breeze, the wind would come with fragrant flowers. And the oceans and rivers, without even anyone having to go and excavate them. They were just the waves were putting massive quantities of jewels and pearls on the shore for the pleasure of Hiranyakashipu. The whole creation was fully opulent out of fear of this demon. the demigods, they didn't know what to do. So they all approached Lord Vishnu and explained the whole situation. Lord Vishnu told them that you please hear and chant my glories.
That is the real benediction.
The real benediction is not to get your post back and make the material world a nice place. That's not a benediction. The real benediction I'm giving you is you should hear about me and you should constantly chant my holy names. When Hiranyakashipu sufficiently offends his own little son, I will come to kill him. Just be patient and chant Hare Krishna. Chant the names of the Lord. Hiranyakashipu had four sons. Of them, Prahlad was the best. Srimad Bhagavatam describes the beautiful qualities of Prahlad. And anyone who wants to be Krishna conscious must try to imbibe these qualities in his or her own hearts. Please listen carefully. It's not something that you can bypass. We have to develop the qualities of a real Vaishnav if we want Krishna to take our chanting of the name seriously. He was cultured, determined to do the right thing under all circumstances. He was perfectly self-controlled, kind to all, and especially, he was the best friend of everyone. And how was he the best friend of everyone? To the respectable people, Prahlad was their menial servant. To the poor and downtrodden people, Prahlad acted just like a loving father. To people who were Prahlad's equals, he was just like their most kind, sympathetic brother. And to his superiors, like his God brothers, older God brothers, his teachers, his spiritual masters, he treated them just like he would treat the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He had no false pride, devoid of all material desires. And Narada Muni said, in any assembly where devotees are describing the glories of the Supreme Lord in pure devotional service, Prahlad will be remembered. Yudhisthira asked, why, if he was such a nice boy, did Hiranyakashipu want to kill him? Why did he torture him like this? Narada Muni continues. Should I continue? There's no breakfast prasadam, so so you might as well say Hari Bol. Little Prahlad was sent to school. School run by the two seminal sons of Shukracharya named Shanda and Amarka, where they were training the students, who were the children of Hiranyakashipu and his ministers, to take the qualities of Hiranyakashipu and live by them and learn to conquer and exploit. So they were taught politics, sense gratification, materialistic economic development. And Prahlad was so respectful. He just appeared to be the best of the students. The teachers were so proud that Hiranyakashipu's best son is learning so nicely. One day, Prahlad came before his father, who was sitting on the throne. Prahlad, with folded hands, offered his obeisances to his father. And his father, deep affection, lifted up Prahlad and put him on his lap. His heart brimming over with such affection for his son, he asked him the simple question. You are going to school, Prahlad. Please tell me, what are the best of subjects that you study? Prahlad Maharaj spoke. Tatsadu manye suravarya dehinam sada samudvignatiyam asad grahat hitvatma patam grihamanda kupam vanam gotho yadharim ashrayeta. He praised his father by saying just what his father would like to hear at the beginning. Just to open his father's heart up so that he would get the message he was going to speak afterward. We were speaking the other day. This is the process of preaching, to change a person's heart. Prabodhananda Saraswati was quoted by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. When you go to preach to people, this is the method. Take straw between your teeth, which represents humbling yourself before that person. With folded hands, bow your head and say, oh, sir, you are such a respectable person and you are so learned and you are so highly cultured and so successful. And by this time, that person, his heart is just open to hear everything you say. And then when you get them at that point, you say, now kindly forget everything you know. And take shelter of the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Prahlad was very intelligent. Oh, father, king of the daityas, oh, best of the demons. Ah, Hiranyakashipu. As far as I have learned from my spiritual master, dear father, any person who has accepted the temporary body and temporary household life is certainly embarrassed by anxiety because of having fallen into a dark, deep well. And in that well, there is no water. There is only suffering. That's you, father. That's where you are. In that dark, deep well, due to uncontrolled senses. So give it up. Go to the forest of Vrindavan and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, where there is only the cultivation of Krishna consciousness. Prahlad Maharaj Ki Jai. Hiranyakashipu laughed. 5-year-old boy speaking like this. His intelligence has been spoiled by the enemy. There must be Vaishnavas secretly entering into the school and polluting the hearts of these innocent children. He told his servants, bring him back to school and protect him from the Vaishnavas. They brought little Prahlad, who completely submissively went back to school. And Sandana Marka, they were very disturbed. Their reputation was on the line. They spoke very nicely to Prahlad because they knew if they spoke really nicely, he would tell them the truth. They said, oh, little Prahlad, oh, best of your family. Oh, you are so cultured and you are so nice. in every way. Please tell us.
Where did you get this philosophy from? How have you been influenced by our enemy?
Prahlad responded that only a person with uncontrolled mind and senses sees in terms of friend and enemy. He said, if we understand the super soul in everyone's heart, everyone is part of God, there is no friend and no enemy. As for me, the super soul, Lord Krishna, has attracted my heart like a magnet. And there is no possible way for me to be independent. My mind is constantly attracted to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord Vishnu.
Ah, they were very much disturbed. They picked up a stick.
Srila Prabhupada explains there's four ways of trying that in political circles that we try to discipline somebody. What are they? First, you make legislation. You make some law against them. You issue some legal threat to them. What is the second? That's the third. First is you file an order against them. Create fear. Then you start attacking them in so many other ways. And if that doesn't work, then you offer them a very lucrative, profitable post in which you control them. And if even that doesn't work, weapons to attack them. Hare Krishna. So they picked up stick, put it before Prahlad, and said, Prahlad, although you are born in the family of the greatest of the demons, Hiranyakashipu, you have become his enemy due to associating with his enemy. Said, just like in a beautiful forest of sandalwood trees, a thorn tree grows. That wood from the thorn tree is made into the handle of an axe to cut down the whole forest of sandalwood trees. You are that wooden handle, and Vishnu is the metal axe. If you are not changed, you will be the destruction of this wonderful, wonderful dynasty. We will never allow this to happen. Now you listen to every word we speak. And surrender. They taught Prahlad
day after day, week after week, month after month.
And Prahlad very respectfully honored them. And they considered now Prahlad is first class. Prahlad's mother decorated him with very opulent cloth. Ornaments and presented him to the father in the presence of Shanda and Amarka. Prahlad bowed down to his father and stood with folded hands. Ah, Hiranyakashipu was so happy to see this. He picked up Prahlad and put him on his lap, smelled his head, he smelled little Prahlad's head. And was so overcome with parental affection that tears were flowing from his eyes and his limbs were trembling. He embraced his son again and again and spoke, "Dear son, please repeat to me, what is the best knowledge?" Prahlad, sitting on his lap with folded hands, eyes looking at his father's demoniac face, glazed with love, he spoke,
Sravanam kirtanam Vishnu smaranam pada sevanam archanam bandanam dasyam sakyam atma nivedanam. My dear Father, by following these nine processes of devotional service, beginning with hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, always remembering the Lord, worshiping the Lord, offering prayers to the Lord, becoming the servant of the Lord, personally rendering service to the lotus feet of the Lord, surrendering everything to the Lord, I have found that one who perfects their lives by pleasing Krishna through these nine processes of devotional service is really a man of great knowledge and learned in the truth. Hiranyakashipu exploded. This was too much for him. He screamed at Sanda and Amarka, "What have you done to my son? What have you taught him? In the guise of my allies, you have become traitors. You have become the instruments of my enemy." Sanda and Amarka were trembling in fear. They said, "No, we never taught him any of this. We don't know where he learned any of this. We don't know anything what he learned. We're only teaching him what we know." Then Hiranyakashipu was even more angry. He was the personification of anger, and he directed every bit of it toward little Prahlad, who stood there fearlessly. Hiranyakashipu screamed at Prahlad, "If you did not learn this from your teachers, where did you learn it from?" Prahlad Maharaj replied, Matir na Krishne paratasvatova mito bibedyete grihavratanam adanda gobira vishatam tamishram puna punash charvata charvananam. My dear Father, because of their uncontrolled senses, persons too attached to materialistic life make progress toward hellish conditions and repeatedly chew that which has already been chewed. Their inclinations toward Krishna are never aroused, either by their own endeavors, by the instructions of others, or by any other means. As long as you do not control your mind and senses, my Father, you'll never understand Krishna. Hiranyakashipu was boiling over like a volcano just erupting. And Prahlad continued, Nate vidusvara tukatim hibishnum durasya ye bahir artamanina andayatandar upaniyamanam te pishtantriyam urudam nibadha. My Father, persons who are strongly entrapped by the consciousness of enjoying material life and who have therefore accepted as a leader or guru another person too addicted to sense gratification, it is like a blind man leading another blind man. They both fall into the ditch and suffer. They're bound by the ropes of fruitive activities, and they continue suffering in their materialistic existence again and again. Hiranyakashipu was boiling over even more, but he was silent. Prahlad was watching him go through these transformations. And with folded palms, he fearlessly concluded, Naisham matish tavarurukramangrim sprishat yanartha pagamoyadartha mahiya sampadara jobishekam niskinchina natnanavriti yavat. My Father, there's a solution, though. unless they smear upon their bodies the dust of the lotus feet of a Vaishnav who is completely freed from material contamination. Persons very much inclined toward materialistic life cannot be attached to the lotus feet of the Lord who is glorified for his activities. Only by becoming Krishna conscious and taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, in this way one can be freed from material contamination. Prahlad Maharaj ki jai!
But in the courtyard of, in the court of Hiranyakashipu, nobody said jai. Hiranyakashipu was blinded with anger. He screamed out, "You are the killer of my brother! Kill him!" Then he gave his philosophical justification to everyone who was present. Just as the limb of a body is very, very precious to the body, but if the limb has a horrible malignant disease, if you don't cut it off, it will kill the rest of the body. Or just like uncontrolled senses will kill the spiritual practices of a yogi. They are enemies. They must be killed. The enemy must be killed, even if he is a member of one's own family. Even if he is a small child, kill him. The associates of Hiranyakashipu, under his direction, made their goal in life to kill 5-year-old little Prahlad. They took sharp tridents, which defeated the demigods, caused them to flee from their planets. They continuously pierced the body of Prahlad with these tridents, with evil, evil words crying out, "Pierce him, chop him, kill him." And Prahlad just stood, remembering the Lord, remembering the name of the Lord, the beautiful form of the Lord, and the love of the Lord, meditating on the beautiful pastimes of the Lord. That was Prahlad. Therefore, by the mercy of the Lord, the trident could not cause the slightest harm to Prahlad's body. They threw him under the feet of mad, trampling elephants. But the elephant could not harm him, even the slightest. They threw him and held him down on the bottom of the ocean. They create a blazing, blazing fire. And Hiranyakashipu's sister, Holika, can you imagine being the sister of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu? It's quite a family. She was very powerful, and she had a benediction that she could not be burned by fire. So Hiranyakashipu was utilizing every resource he had. She took little Prahlad and brought him right into the center of this mass blazing fire and just held him there on her lap. And Prahlad didn't even try to escape. He was just affectionately submissive on the lap of his auntie. The fire blazed and blazed and blazed and blazed, and they're in the middle of it, not next to it, in the middle of it. For hours and hours and hours, and finally it was just too much. Holika burned. And Prahlad comes walking out. Further infuriating Hiranyakashipu. Now, not only is the killer of my brother, he's the killer of my sister too. They took him to the top of a mountain and big mountain. And in Satyayuga, the mountains were bigger than today. Can you imagine a Satyayuga mountain? They found the highest mountain and threw him off. But Krishna protected him. An entire pit of venomous snakes, they threw him in there. But none of the snakes could harm our little Prahlad. They took gigantic boulders of stones and they just dropped them on top of him. Stones that were hundreds, thousands of tons that many, many, many big, powerful rakshasas were, with all their might, they were pushing, 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 and he fell boom, on this little boy. But nothing could faze him. Prahlad had no fear. He had no anxiety. He was remembering Krishna. He was surrendered to Krishna. Krishna, if you want to kill me, I'm your servant. If you want to protect me, I'm your servant. Ma, what is it? Ma robi rako bi jo icha tohar. I am Krishna. You can kill me if you like. You can protect me if you like. Doesn't matter. I am your servant unconditionally. That was the mood of Prahlad. Bajahuremana Sri Nandanandana Avaya Charanaravindare. We pray to our mind, please take shelter of the lotus feet of Nandanandana. Because only in that state can you be fearless. As long as there's fear, you have to suffer. There can be no real happiness. There could be no real pleasure in this world as long as there's fear. Prahlad was fearless because he had total faith. He wasn't attached to living. He wasn't attached to dying. He was only attached to Krishna. They fed him deadly poison. They started putting mystical spells on him, getting all kinds of sorcerers and mystic yogis and tantrics and everything to put spells on him, to make him mad, to destroy him internally and externally. They tried to starve him. They put him in a place where there was no food or water. Day after day after day, a five-year-old boy. They subject him to days and days and days of freezing ice cold or scorching heat. And Prahlad was smiling through it all. He was indifferent. Hiranyakashipu was going insane with fear. The difference. Prahlad is fearless. He's a little five-year-old boy. Hiranyakashipu is the king of the universe with all mystic powers, and he's fearful. Although he had such unlimited power, he was so morose. He just sat silently with his head shrunk down, lamenting. He was thinking, because my son has such power and I've offended him in so many ways, I will be killed. Or maybe not. I can't control him. I can't destroy him. Therefore, I fear him. He was sunk in an ocean of lamentation. Chandanamarka saw their master in this state and said, why are you taking it so seriously? He's only a child. He's only doing these childhood things. When he grows up, he'll change. He'll be a good son. Just give him some time. Yes? Sometimes we see in Krishna consciousness when children are little, they really like bhakti.
They dance and they chant and they bow down and they love everything about Krishna consciousness. But then they grow up. Something happens. You know, something called puberty that was created by Maya Devi under Krishna's jurisdiction. And then it's very hard. Previously, they love to bow down. I know children who, when they're little kids, their parents are sleeping. It's Mangalarti time. Come, bring me to Mangalarti. Come. Why? And they're crying, I want to go to Mangalarti. All right, I'll take you to Mangalarti. And a few years later, the parents are saying, why you sleep all day? Come to Mangalarti. The parents are saying, I want you to come to Mangalarti. So, just leave me alone. I have other things to do. Very difficult. So most children, they're naturally Krishna conscious when they're really young, but when they start growing older, sometimes they change. But if the parents are good examples, usually they go through their phase of exploring material nature and they suffer a bit and then they come back. And they surrender very nicely. But if the parents are not good examples, they may not come back in this lifetime. So it is a great responsibility for all parents to be a good example. Not only in word, but in deed. So they were using this philosophy that he's this pseudo-Vaishnav now. But that's because he's just a restless child, he's playful and all this other stuff. But just let him grow up. He'll be a good demon. And we'll train him. He'll come back to our school. We guarantee you'll be very satisfied with our product. So they pacify Hiranyakashipu. And he goes back to the school. And again, weeks are going by, and Prahlad is just so respectful. He appeared to be learning the subject so well. But one day, Srila Prabhupada explains that Shandanamarka went home to take their tiffin. I'm sure it wasn't prasad either. And while Prahlad was, he didn't disturb anyone. He was just so kind. But the classmates, they loved him, naturally, because he was just so gracious to everyone. They said, Prahlad, come join us. We're playing. Come. We're going to do nice play. Come and join us, Prahlad. Why don't you want to come and play with us? And Prahlad entered into their midst. And he told them, why are you spoiling your life with all this sense gratification? 5-year-old children. Komara acharet pragyo dharman bhagavataniha durlabam manosanjanma tad apyatrupam artadam. The children may ask, Prahlad, you're only 5 years old, and that's all we are. You know, when we get older, we can think about all these high topics. Now is the time just to study and play. Prahlad Maharaj said, one who is sufficiently intelligent should use the human body from the very beginning of life to practice devotional service. Giving up all other engagements, the human body is rarely achieved, and although temporary, it is meaningful because one can perform devotional service. Even a slight amount of sincere devotional service can give one complete perfection. He continued speaking how the pursuit of sense gratification is such a tragic waste of this human form of life. Every moment is so precious. Sixth chapter, there's a beautiful verse from the Vishnu Purana. Sahanis tan mahachidram, so mahachachavibram. That even a moment wasted at human form of life in forgetfulness of Vishnu
is the most horrible tragedy that can ever take place. To lose a moment by not remembering Lord Vishnu. Prahlad Maharaj said, why should you strive and put so much of your time and energy to be happy in this material world? Because according to karmic destiny, you're going to get your happiness or distress anyway. You endeavor for happiness, but even though you don't endeavor for misery, it comes anyway. So similarly, without any endeavor, happiness is going to come and misery is going to come, so why endeavor at all? Why not utilize this human form of life to cultivate Krishna consciousness? In a life, at the most, we live 100 years. And how this 100 years is wasted by a materialistic person. First thing, a person sleeps practically half the day. In this way, 50 years of life is wasted sleeping in total ignorance, not making any progress anywhere. And then one's a little baby child, 10 years are wasted just being bewildered, just not knowing who we are, and then playing with toys, and then trying to somehow or other figure out who I am and who everybody else is and what the world is. Then all kinds of games and playthings. Another 10 years are wasted. And then, the next 10 years in studies. Just studying with all kinds of aspirations for what we'll achieve in the future. Another 10 years without bhakti. And in old age, the last 20 years of life, you're practically an invalid. Your mind is not working right. Your intelligence is not working right. Your body's not working right. Again, 20 more years are wasted. And the 20 years that are most productive, usually a person gets married. And in that, his mind and senses become uncontrolled. Becomes attached to family, becomes attached to lust, becomes attached to illusion. Such a person, in his mind are always pictures of all his family members. And Prahlad Maharaj explains, when the wife takes the husband into a solitary place, his mind becomes completely enraptured by that. And then the little children, they speak broken words that don't really make sense. And that further enraptures the mind of the family man. And then he's always worried about the welfare of his parents. He needs to get his son married. And usually his son's naughty. That enraptures the son, the father. What to speak of a daughter? Prahlad Maharaj is speaking. The daughter is so much an attachment to the father. Even after she's married and living in another house, he's always in anxiety, worried about whether she's happy and safe and protected and whether they're treating her nicely. And such a householder, in order to maintain it all, is always hungry for money. For such a materialistic householder, Prahlad Maharaj said in his eloquent poetry, money is the honey. It is very sweet. Such a materialistic family person has no reservations to waste all the valuable facilities and time of the human form of life, but such a person will be excruciatingly conscious not to waste a single farthing of money. And through the process, they suffer a distaste for material suffering, but they can't escape it. And they become a plaything in the hands of Maya. Prahlad tells his friend, keep away from such people. Take shelter of the Vaishnavas, the devotees of the Lord, who will help you to take shelter of the Lord. And with good association, if you are sincere, by the Lord's mercy, there will be no impediments for your spiritual progress. He said, the Vedas deal very much with Atta, Dhamma, and Kama. With sense economic development, religiosity, and sense gratification. But Prahlad Maharaj said, I have studied this, and I have found it is all external. It is all temporary. You should focus all your energy on the real goal of life. Nate vidu swartha gatim he Vishnu. On devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Surrender to Krishna is the only thing that is transcendental and can bring real happiness. Prahlad said, I have learned this knowledge which Krishna spoke to Narada Muni, and Narada Muni, my Guru Maharaj, enlightened me. The children asked, how did you speak to Narada Muni? Where did you get this knowledge from? How is it possible? We never learned any of this. We never see Vaishnavas. We're in the same school as you. And after school, we have some independence. But after school, you go right to the palace of Hiranyakashipu. You're only 5 years old. Where did you meet Narada Muni? Prahlad explained, when my father went to the Mandara mountain to perform his tapasya, while he was gone, the demigods took advantage, conquered all the asuras. The asuras had to flee in all directions. They marched into Hiranyakashipu's palace and plundered it all, took over everything. And there they found my mother, Kayadu. They kidnapped her. As they were taking her away, she was crying in great fear. Narada Muni appeared. He said, why are you taking this woman? She is a chaste woman. She has done nothing to harm anyone. She's a woman of good quality. Why are you taking her and causing her such severe distress? Indra said, it is not the woman. We have no harm, we have no danger from her. But the child in her womb is born of the seed of Hiranyakashipu. We will keep this woman in our custody. When the child is born, we will kill him. Then we will release her. Narada Muni said, the child in her womb is a perfect self-controlled devotee. He is a Mahabhagavat, a pure soul. Prabhupada explains, the demigods had such trust in the words of Narada Muni that they offered obeisances to the child in the womb and circumambulated the mother several times and released her. Prahlad said, Narada Muni took my mother to his own hermitage in the forest in a very, very secluded place and instructed her in the science of Bhagavad Dharma. I heard every word from the womb of my mother. When Hiranyakashipu returned, Narada Muni returned my mother to my father's palace. Due to the association with my father over the years, my mother forgot everything. But I have never forgotten the treasured words of my spiritual master. He told his friends, just like a geologist knows exactly how to find gold, similarly, a devotee always searches and finds the Paramatma in everyone's heart. Does not identify anyone on the basis of bodily designations, because everyone is a child of God. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmani gavihastini suni chaiva svapakicha pandita samadarshana. The same truth is spoken by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. A learned man or woman who sees the truth, they can witness the Supreme Lord in the heart of everyone and therefore is equal toward everyone. Whether one is a Brahmin or whether one is a elephant or a dog or a dog eater. Equal vision is to see the spiritual quality in every living being. Srila Prabhupada in this regard explained, on the material level, there is no such thing as equality. There have been so many political movements trying to create equality. Just like in the United States, was it the Constitution? All men are created equal. There's never been two men in the history of the universe created equal. Everyone has their own unique distinctions. Some are intelligent, some are not intelligent. Some are good workers, some are not good workers. Women have their strengths, men have different strengths. The modes of material nature, there's unlimited mixtures that create such amazing variegatedness. The variegatedness of all living beings is what's so beautiful about creation. But everyone is equal because on a spiritual level, which is the only truth about our identity, we are all part of God. We are individual but uniquely equal in all regards. So the only possibility of having realistic sense of equality is to have spiritual vision. Then caste, race, sex, nationality, color of the skin, rich, poor, all of these other things, they are all just superficial differences which really are not very important if you see the soul within the heart. Then you will be the compassionate, loving, well-wisher of every living being. That is real equality. Prahlad Maharaj is explaining this to his friends, that a geologist, he sees gold, and in the same way, a devotee knows how to find the Paramatma in every living being's heart. He explains there's three states of consciousness. There's the waking state, there's the deep sleep state, and there's the dreaming state. In all these three states of consciousness, the soul is experiencing the illusions of this world. But it is your duty, my friends, to understand the real nature of the soul and its relationship with the Supreme Soul, the Paramatma. And I will tell you how to do that, Prahlad said. First, you must accept a guru, a spiritual master in disciplic succession, who is living by these principles, who can impart knowledge, who can access the mercy of God and engage you in the process of devotional service. You should associate with saintly persons, and in that company, worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He said, always remember the Lord within everyone's heart. And through this process,
of hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, respect everyone. If you see the Paramatma in everyone's heart, or even if you theoretically understand the Paramatma's in everyone's heart, we will be impelled to respect every living being. Amani Namanadena. In this process, we can please the Lord when we hear about him and chant his names. And through the process, we will cut down the six enemies of lust, envy, anger, pride, greed, and illusion. The children were so attracted by Prahlad, they accepted every word he spoke. They all became Vaishnavas, immersed in hearing and chanting of the Supreme Lord, controlling their senses, completely disgusted with this concept of friends and enemies. Shandana Marka started saying that everyone in their whole school were devotees. They were all devotees. Shandana Marka would step out for a few minutes. The students, you know, they were just like Prahlad. They were respectful, appearing just like the studies. But as soon as they go out, the children would start talking about Krishna. Prahlad Maharaj taught them. Soon they had tears in their eyes, their hairs were standing on end, their limbs were trembling, they were dancing in ecstasy as they chanted the holy names. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shandana Marka, furious. They grabbed Prahlad and just took him right before his father and explained exactly what his son had done to the school. Hiranyakashipu, anger overcame him. He hissed like a snake that was just trampled on by someone's foot. Did you ever trample on a deadly cobra with your foot? Multiply by that by 100 million times, and that's what Prahlad was facing in Hiranyakashipu. Meanwhile, Prahlad was very peacefully with folded hands offering his respectful obeisances to his father. His father screamed, "You impudent lowest amongst mankind! You rascal! You fool! You violated my power!" You violated my power to rule over you. Therefore, you must be destroyed. He was so angry, his entire body was shaking and trembling. His eyes were red. His hairs was practically standing on end in rage. Now, we have read that when he was angry with even Indra, they would run away and surrender and do whatever he said. Now, all of his anger, more than ever before in his entire life, he was venting anger on Prahlad. Can you imagine how he was staring at Prahlad? And Prahlad was just looking right into his eyes with a little smile, folded hands, totally peaceful, offering him respects. Prahlad Maharaj ki. You have violated my power to rule over you. By whose power does a rascal like you overstep my power to rule you? Prahlad Maharaj answered, "My dear father, I receive my power from the same person that you receive your power from. Dear Father, you are calling me your enemy? And you are saying Vishnu is your enemy? Your only enemy is your uncontrolled mind. When you seek to see everyone as equal, then only can you worship Lord Vishnu perfectly. Hiranyakashipu, he screamed out, "You rascal! You think yourself to be superior to me? You think you can instruct me? You talk like one who is about to die. You speak about this Lord who is everywhere, who is all-pervading, who is the source of all power. Where is he, Prahlad? Where is he? Is he in this pillar?" Prahlad said, "Yes, he is everywhere, my father." Hiranyakashipu jumped up from his throne, drew his sword, and screamed out, "Now I will sever your head. Now I will kill you. Let me see how your God will protect you." With his fist, he smashed the pillar. From the pillar, shaking, trembling, and a shrilling sound that no one in creation had ever heard. Then, just to prove the words of Prahlad to be true, that his Lord was in the pillar burst open, and born from that pillar was a form that was neither man nor lion. And he roared. He roared in such a way that created trembling in the entire planet Earth, in the entire universe. Hiranyakashipu tried to trace out the source of this sound. And he saw a wonderful form. Half man, half lion, standing before him. Hiranyakashipu studied this form very carefully. And what did he see? Angry eyes in the form of the Lord that were the color of molten gold. His mane was shining and expanding in all directions, even scattering the clouds. His face fearful. His deadly teeth pointed like daggers. Razor-sharp sword moving about like a dueling sword. His razor-sharp tongue moving about like a dueling sword. His ears were erect and motionless. His nostrils and his gaping mouth were like the caves of mountains. His body touched the sky. His neck was short and thick, chest broad, waist thin. His body hairs were white as the moonshine. His arms were like flanks of soldiers, each one carrying a different weapon. Hiranyakashipu thought to himself, "Vishnu has come to kill me. But what is the use? No one could stand before me in battle." Now let us analyze this psychology of Hiranyakashipu. In the presence of Narasimhadev,
Hiranyakashipu is like a little wasp. The roar, the anger, the sighs of the Lord was unlimited. But this is how the anartas, or the enemies within, can steal away a person's intelligence. Krishna says in Gita, Indriyanam hi charatam yanmano navadiyate tarasya harati pragya vayurnar ivambasi. As a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, even one of the senses in which the mind focuses can carry away a man's intelligence. If you allow yourself to succumb to the dictations of lust, can bewilder your intelligence. Yatato hyabhikonteya purushasya vipashchita indriyani pramatini haranti prashamamana. The senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they can carry away the discrimination even of a wise man who's trying to control them. We have seen throughout history how lust has just covered a person's intelligence to do things they know are wrong, and it ruins their entire life. Anger. Kama esha krodha esha rajoguna shamudbhava mahashano mahapapma vidyenami havairanam. It is lust only, Krishna says, that is the deadly sinful enemy of this world. And when lust is unfulfilled, krodha, anger. And we have seen within the world, history, and perhaps in our own lives or the lives of our loved ones, how if we allow ourselves by our own free will to be overcome by anger, it could cause us to say things and do things that we can regret for the rest of our lives. In fact, one mistake under the influence of anger could cause your death, could cause the death of others, could destroy everything you've worked so hard for. Lust, anger, envy. How envy can dictate upon a person to engage in such horrible, abominable words and activities that can destroy your whole life. Cover our intelligence. For a devotee, we know we shouldn't be doing these things. But if we're not very, very careful, Srila Prabhupada said, the problem with Western devotees, and in my opinion, living in Bombay, it applies equally to Indians, because you're all so westernized. So the problem with you people is you're not sufficiently afraid of Maya. We don't understand the power of Maya, how if we give in, she will corrupt us. You just give an inch and she'll take your whole life. She's the proprietor of greed. How greed can corrupt a person's life, how greed can destroy families, how greed can destroy everything. Because we lose our own intelligence. We lose the values that are so sacred. Maya is really greedy. She's like the supreme capitalist of this world. Can I give an example? Just like there are so many court cases here in India of countries like Germany or Japan. They come in with a product and they undersell lower price than all the companies making it in India. How do you go? And they take a loss. They're happy to take a loss because they're looking to the future. Some of our own devotees are battling it in the courts with these people. For this very purpose, they come in,
They're in a foreign country. They're producing in huge volumes, and they're selling it and taking a loss so that they can pit all the Indian businesses out. Everybody buys their product because it's so cheap. Then the whole industry amongst the Indians is bankrupt, finished. And then what? They raise the prices higher than ever, and you have nowhere else to go. Harivo. That's what they do. That is business in Kali Yuga. Well, Maya, she's giving them their intelligence. She's the reservoir of all that intelligence. And that's how she's going to get you. She's going to give you from some free samples. Take it, take it, take it. I'm not greedy. I'm giving. Take this. Very nice enjoyment. Very nice facility. Don't worry. You're a devotee. I know you're a devotee, but don't be a fanatic. Don't be an extremist. Be balanced. Enjoy. I'll give it to you for free. And you'll see. She'll even inspire you to chant your rounds better after she gives you some sense gratification. She'll do that. It's like a fisherman. A fisherman is patient. Puts the bait on the hook. The fish doesn't see the hook, only sees the bait. And he eats it. Okay, it's in the mouth. If the fisherman just... What happens? Lift up. I've heard it. It just comes right out. The fisherman comes up, the hook's there, but the bait's gone. Waste of time. No, a good fisherman makes the fish think he can enjoy it. Very patient. The fish just keeps eating. And other fishes are going, they're around saying, hey, you know, there's a hook in there. Don't eat it. Spit it out. Get it out. You know, you're in Maya. Sanskrit, Matirna Krishne Paratashvatova. You'll never attain Krishna if you just keep eating this bait. Puna punas charvata charvananam. We've already eaten this in so many lifetimes. Spit it out. Say, what? You're saying that? But I'm eating it. Nothing's happening. Everything's fine. I'm enjoying. You're not enjoying. I'm enjoying better than you because you're so renounced. But I'm just as happy, just as everything, more happy than you, and I'm just as safe as you. There's no difference. The only difference between you and me is I'm enjoying and you're not. Yes? And Maya saying, yes, he understands very nicely. And she doesn't pull the line in. She actually lets it go out. So the fish is even going the other direction and thinking, yeah, see, I'm free. And while he's going the other way, he swallows it. Goes into his throat. Into his stomach. Deeper into his stomach. Starts getting digested. Goes into his intestines. Now, just like Nrisimhadev was very attached to those intestines of Hiranyakashipu. So the fisherman also, he's like the Nrisimhadev in the Maya form. When it gets down there and the hook is, there's no way that that hook is ever going to come out. You're hooked. You've heard the saying, you're hooked. Then the fisherman goes, and the fish helpless. That's how Maya works. Yes, we hear the philosophy. Just like I've heard from devotees that, you know, a little LSD or a little marijuana or a little tea or coffee helps me chant my rounds better. And from my experience, they're not just saying that as a justification.
they actually feel that. What does that mean? That means that Maya Devi, she's actually empowering you to chant even better so that you just become more faithful in her. And you become more negligent of the teachings of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. You enjoy. And even you find, you know, I'm deviating, but I'm even becoming a better preacher. And more people are being influenced by me. So, this is very good. But at a certain point, Maya's greedy. She's the supreme capitalist of this world. She'll give you the free samples. She'll get you addicted to those free samples. She'll make you think you're making spiritual advancement despite these. And then when you are completely under her control, she knows, then she takes you right out of the ocean of devotional service and puts you in her net. So yes, any of these anarthas have the power to overcome us. Look at Hiranyakashipu, his pride. He was so arrogant, unbelievable, that he's looking at Lord Narasimhadev face to face, and he knows he's Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But he's so proud that he thinks no one, even Vishnu, could defeat me. I've never lost a battle, and I won't lose this one. That is illusion. That is the power of Maya. Even Narasimhadev face to face, and you think you can kill him. Hiranyakashipu, with his club, he attacked Sri Narasimhadev. He ran into Narasimhadev's body just like an insignificant insect, like a moth flies into a raging fire. Lord Narasimhadev captured him effortlessly. Hiranyakashipu was struggling and straying and wiggling to get released from Narasimhadev's clutches. And then the Lord released him. And Hiranyakashipu was such a fool. He thought that the Lord has no power to hold me. He was thinking that this is the evidence, the proof that I will be victorious. He has no power over me. He took his sword and his shield, and like a hawk, he attacked the Lord again. And then he started flying in the sky by his mystic powers and attacking the Lord from all directions. And meanwhile, the Supreme Personality of Godhead was shrilling with laughter. And that laughter was piercing every corner of the entire universe. The Lord then captured Hiranyakashipu right out from the sky, just like a snake captures a mouse, or like Varuna captures a venomous snake. Hiranyakashipu was afflicted. Narasimhadev would not allow him to come out of his clutches. Hiranyakashipu was moving his limbs in all directions, here, there, and everywhere. Then our Lord placed Narasimhadev on his lap, supported by his thighs. He brought him to the doorway. With the nails of his paws, he easily tore Hiranyakashipu to pieces. Sri Narasimha Bhagavan ki jai. Then just so the whole dynasty of Rakshasas, Daitas, Asuras, and the whole world, the power of his anger. He ripped out the intestines of Hiranyakashipu and placed them around his own neck as the garland of victory. And to make it more prominent, this amazing pastime, Narasingha Dev uprooted Hiranyakashipu's heart. Just to make sure that the demigods were relieved of all fear that they would ever have to deal with this demon again. And then, like a piece of garbage, insignificant, Narasingha Dev just threw Hiranyakashipu's corpse to the ground. His eyes were so frightful. He was impossible for anyone to look at. The Lord was sprinkled with blood. Then he turned to all the soldiers of Hiranyakashipu who were attacking him. And with the tips of his nails, he did away with all of them. His head shook the clouds. Lord Narasingha Dev's eyes stole the illumination of the sun. His breathing agitated all the oceans and seas. His roaring caused the elephants to cry in fear. The pressure of his feet on the ground caused mountains to spring up from the earth. The Lord then sat on the throne of Hiranyakashipu. No one could come forward to approach him. The devas and their wives showered him with flowers. Various groups of demigods were offering prayers, expressing their gratitude of how Lord Narasingha Dev saved them. The Prajapatis, they said, Hiranyakashipu, forbid us from procreating. The serpents said, he stole all our jewels. The Pitras said, he took, other demigods, they said, he took all our oblations for the offerings. He stopped the Shraddha ceremony. Literally, he controlled the universe. And they all offered their prayers of glorification to Lord Narasingha Dev. And what do you think the residents of Vaikuntha prayed to honor the Lord? That, yes, this is wonderful. He's liberated Jayan Vijay. He's one step, they're one step closer to coming back home, back to Godhead. But none of them can approach the Lord. They offered their prayers from a distance. Even Lord Brahma could not approach the Lord. He was so angry. They approach Lakshmi. You are his consort. Please pacify the Lord. Lakshmi looked at him. She dared not walk another step forward. She has never seen her husband in this form or this mood before. And then Lord Brahma approached little Prahlad, who was still standing with folded hands. After just seeing the Lord ripped to pieces, his father, Hiranyakashipu, his eyes welling with tears of ecstatic love, Brahma induced Prahlad to approach the Lord. Prahlad walked right up to the Lord and offered his dandavat pranams. The love of Prahlad conquered Lord Narasingha Dev. This is bhakti. Hiranyakashipu, with all of his powers, with all of his armies, was conquered by Narasingha Dev. But little Prahlad, his humility and devotion conquered the Lord. Lord Narasimhadev placed his hand on Prahlad's head. At that moment, he relieved Prahlad forever of all the inflictions of the modes of material nature, invested with him the perfection of love of God, and also empowered Prahlad to offer prayers with his purifying mind fixed on the Lord. Prahlad began, "How is it possible that me, who was so fallen, who was from a family of demons, that I can approach you? I have no qualifications except your causeless mercy. I have seen what this world is about. People are so hungry after sense gratification and material opulence. My father had it all, and yet he was utterly miserable. But Gajendra, in times of yore, he gave up all of his opulence and surrendered to you and found eternal shelter and real happiness. My Lord, even if a person has all the 12 qualities of a devotee, of a Brahmin, all the 12 qualities of good behavior in Brahminical culture, if he's not surrendered to you with devotion, he cannot achieve you. But even if a dog eater, a person of the most degraded social position, worships you with love, he is fit to be the spiritual master of the universe. The Lord accepts, not because he needs, but the Lord accepts our offerings for the devotee's benefit. And you do what is for the benefit of all living beings. Today you have killed my father, but we see everyone is rejoicing. Just like if a poisonous snake or scorpion is killed, everyone is very happy by this. My father tried to find so many remedies for his miseries, but he failed. The only remedy is your devotional service. People want duration of life, material opulence, and I've seen it all in my father and his people. They're ultimately all vanquished. But I am not afraid of anything, because I'm absorbed in always remembering you. My Lord, my only concern is for all the fools and rascals who have forgotten your loving service and who are trying to be happy separate from you. That is my only anxiety. Paradukaduki. Quality of a saintly person. It is a universal principle. For a saintly person, our unhappiness is to see the suffering of others. Prahlad Maharaj expressed, whether I'm in a pit of snakes, whether I'm in blazing fire, whether I'm in the bottom of the ocean, it's not a problem, because I'm remembering you. But the one anxiety I have in my life is to see this whole civilization of fools and rascals who are trying to enjoy separate from you, and suffering birth after birth after birth. Narasimhadev completely gave up his anger hearing the prayers of Prahlad. And he said to his devotee, "It is my pastime to give benedictions to my devotees. Ask for any benediction you desire, and I will give you." Prahlad Maharaj considered this benediction a great obstacle. Amazing. He never considered Hiranyakashipu an obstacle. He never considered anything Hiranyakashipu did as an obstacle. But he considered the benediction that Narsingadeva is offering him. Ask anything that you want and I'll give you. He could have asked to go back to Godhead. He considered it an obstacle. And he spoke. He said, "My Lord, I'm born in an atheistic family. Please do not tempt me like this. Do not tempt me. I'm not a merchant doing business with you where I surrender my life and I accept something in return. If we expect anything material in return, or even anything spiritual in return for the Lord, for our devotional service, we're not really devotees." We're merchants doing business with the Lord. I'm giving you, I expect something in return. I'm paying the price. Please reciprocate. Prahlad could not tolerate doing business with the Lord. Ashlisya va padaratam panashtu mama darshana marmahatam kurotu va yathat tata vidatatu lampato mat purana tatastu se eva napara. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he illuminated this concept in such a perfect shloka in his Shikshastakam. If you like my Lord, you can embrace me. If that makes you happy, then you can embrace me. If it makes you happy, you can trample upon me. If it makes you happy, you can make me totally brokenhearted by not being present before you, by giving me no access to you. You have every right to deal with me in any way you please, because I am your servant unconditionally. That is love. That was the love of the gopis. That was the love of Prahlad Maharaj. That is what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to give the world, that love. The purest, unconditional state of love of the soul. Nadanam na janam na sundarim kavitam vaja gadisha kamaye mama janamani janmanishwari bhavatat bhakti rohaiti kitvai. The Lord prayed, "I do not want wealth or beautiful ladies. I do not want fame or followers or mystic powers. I do not even want liberation from suffering. I only want to serve you birth after birth after birth." This is the constitutional quality of the soul that's being revealed through Prahlad Maharaj. He feared asking for any benediction. It was repulsive to him. "I am your eternal servant." But he said, "My Lord, if you want to give me a benediction, then you can give me this, that in the core of my heart there will be no traces of material desires. And all that exists in my heart is loving remembrance of you." Narasimhadev, so satisfied with Prahlad's love, he said, "Devotees like you already have no material desires. I now order you to enjoy the kingdom of your father and to rule over the race of the demons. And know that one who always remembers me is always protected by me." Then finally, Prahlad asks for one other benediction. He said, "My Lord, because you are merciful, please grant me this benediction. Excuse my father for his sinful acts. Give him liberation. This is Vaishnav. Up until his last breath, Hiranyakashipu was blaspheming, screaming harsh obscenities, and in every way trying to murder Prahlad with relentless anger. And during his life and after his life, Prahlad simply loved his father as he loves every living being. Give him liberation. The quality of forgiveness is a prominent feature of a real Vaishnav. If you cannot forgive others, don't expect the Lord to forgive you. Haridas Thakur, when he was being beaten in 22 marketplaces by people who were trying to murder him, they were also dragging him by the hair, kicking him, beating him, caning him, whipping him, shouting horrible obscenities toward him and about him. And the whole while, Haridas Thakur was praying to the Supreme Lord, please forgive them. Please give them entrance into your abode. He wasn't saying kill them and send them to hell. He was saying give them love of God. That was his prayer. Please, my Lord, don't consider that it's an offense what they're doing to me. That would hurt me more than what they're doing to me. According to the Gaudiya Vaishnava literature, when Haridas Thakur was manifesting that quality, he was none different than Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad manifested through Haridas. And Vasudev Dutt, he prayed to Lord Chaitanya, I have only one desire. I cannot tolerate seeing people suffer in this world due to their sins. Let everyone go back to Godhead. Liberate the entire universe. And let the sinful karma of everyone come on my head. I want to suffer perpetually hellish conditions so that everyone else can enjoy with you. And he meant it. Lord Chaitanya, hearing Vasudev Dutt's sincere plea, couldn't control his emotions. He was crying. His voice was choked up for some time. He could not even speak. And then finally, with a faltering voice, he said, Vasudev Dutt, what you're saying is no surprise because you are Prahlad Maharaj. But why should you have to suffer? We'll send everyone back to Godhead just because you desire it. There is an Udambura tree in our courtyard. If one fruit of an Udambura tree falls from the tree, what is the loss of the tree? Similarly, if the Lord empties out a whole universe, what is the loss to the Lord? There are so many universes. That is Prahlad's love. He begged nothing for himself, but he begged the highest benediction for the person who hated him and tried to destroy him. Narasingadev said, your father is already purified. Not only your father, but anyone who surrenders to me with devotion, I promise I will liberate 21 generations of that person's family members, both in the past and in the future. That is the power of devotional service. Because in this world, there are so many obstacles and so many obstructions and so many temptations. It takes a lot for a person to give his or her heart to the Lord. And when one is willing to do that in this world, the Lord is so obliged to that devotee, personally, knowing that everyone has natural affection for their family members and relatives, that the Lord reciprocates and gives liberation to 21 generations of all relatives, past and future. Therefore, the greatest service we can do for our family members is love Krishna. Love Krishna. Narsingadev was so pleased by Prahlad, he glorified him. He said, "My devotees are never jealous of anyone. That is the quality of a Vaishnava." Prahlad, for all time in the future, those who follow you are purified. And Narsingadev said, "Those who remember me and you will be taken back home, back to Godhead." Now, Prahlad, perform Shraddha for your father and accept the throne as the king. A few minutes before, Prahlad was being beaten, threatened, poisoned. He was the public enemy number one of the king. And now he's being asked to sit on the throne and be the king. Narasimhadev then turned to Lord Brahma and warned him. It is very dangerous to give these types of benedictions to demons like this. Don't give benedictions like this to such demons. See what havoc it has caused. And then the Lord disappeared. According to the Navadvip Mahatmya, on his way to Vaikuntha, Lord Narasimhadev was thinking, "Let me go to Navadvip." Because in the age of Kali, that is where I will appear as the most munificent and merciful of all avatars, the golden avatar. In the age of Kali, I will give the highest liberation, even to the most sinful people, through the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Lord Narasimhadev knows past, present, future. He knows everything and everyone. And he understood in the age of Kali, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha would come again to the earth as Jagai and Madhai. But at that time, Lord Narasimhadev would not have to tear their bodies apart and rip their hearts out and put their intestines, garlands over their bodies. Lord Narasimhadev is all merciful. Lord Chaitanya is supremely merciful. The opulence of mercy was manifested by the Lord to the highest degree as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Let us take the example of Jaya and Madhvijaya. Hiranyaksha was killed by the Lord, liberated by the Lord with his hoof and his tusk. Hiranyakashipu was killed by the Lord with his nails. Ravana and Kumbhakarna were killed by Lord Ramchandra with the arrows of his mighty bow. Shishupal was killed by the Sudarshan Chakra, Dantavakra also. Those same personalities came again with their full-fledged demoniac behavior. In fact, it is said that Jagai and Madhai had the qualities of all these six: Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, Kumbhakarna, Shishupal, and Dantavakra, all in one. They were really demons, and they were really cruel. They were killing cows, they were drinking blood, they were killing people, they were raping Brahmins' wives, they were plundering, they were setting houses on fire, they were constantly with strong liquors. Hiranyakashipu was always drunk with very, very strong-smelling liquors. Jagai and Madhai, full-fledged. But the Lord, so merciful, most merciful, he didn't kill them with his weapons. He killed their demoniac mentality with the supreme weapon of Harinam Sankirtan. He didn't tear out their hearts. He purified their hearts and made them spiritual abodes. He didn't tear out their entrails and put them as garlands on himself. Lord Chaitanya took off his garlands and put them on Jagai and Madhai. He didn't straggle them on his legs. Lord Chaitanya was embracing them with love and affection. He made them into acharyas. We don't see samadhis for Hiranyakashipu or Ravana. But devotees from all over the world visit the samadhi of Madhai because he became a perfect Vaishnava, a perfect saint, a perfect lover of God. Mahajano yena gata sapanta. We follow in the footsteps of Madhai after his conversion. But that's a very important clause. Because I know devotees could easily take that out of context. It's very convenient. Narasimhadev was just thinking, after killing Hiranyakashipu, in the age of Kali, I'm going to give Hiranyakashipu ecstatic love of God through chanting of the holy names. In my form of Lord Chaitanya, he wanted to go to that place of Navadvip. So he through the airways, Narasimhadev came down into Sri Navadvip Dham in the island of Godrumdvip. And there he washed his hands in the Mandakini River. And he sat down to rest and just meditate on his Leela of Gauranga in Navadvip. That time, all the principal demigods came there. Vishwakarma made nice little hermitages for each of them. And as long as the Lord was there, they all stayed and worshipped him. As Lord Narasimhadev was meditating on the infinite causeless mercy of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, it was their desire, Priti Viti Yachiyata Nagaradigram, in every town and village, let my holy name be chanted. the Srimad Bhagavatam declares, intelligent people in this age of Kali, they will worship Lord Chaitanya with his associates who come with the weapon of the holy name by performing Nam Sankirtan. Vijayate Sri Krishna Nam Sankirtan. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, all glories to the chanting of the holy name. It is the prime benediction for all humanity. The greatest way to take shelter of the mercy of Lord Narasimhadev is to take mercy of his most merciful form, Lord Chaitanya. How? By inducing his causeless love, by loudly chanting the holy name. That is why our brahmacharis invited Madhava Prabhu, Pranabandhu Prabhu, Shruti Dharma Prabhu, Harivamsa Prabhu, and their good wives to help us celebrate this Narasingha Chaturdasi in the most auspicious and effective way by performing Harinam Sankirtan. Cheto darpana marajanam bhava mahadabhagni nirvapanam. When we chant the holy names of the Lord enters into our heart through the holy name and rips apart the anartas of lust, envy, anger, greed, pride, and illusion by his own Shwarup Shakti and awakens ecstatic love. The Lord then went back to his abode. Brahma and Shukracharya coronated Prahlad as the king. And what did Prahlad do in return? He worshipped all the devotees with humility and love. Srimad Bhagavatam gives a benediction at the end of this story. One who, with great attention, hears this narration of Prahlad Maharaj and Lord Narasimhadev, surely reaches the spiritual world. Our beloved Guru Maharaj, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, he had great faith in these words. Therefore, he made such a great effort to provide the Srimad Bhagavatam for the whole world, made it available in practically every major language of the world, established temples where people could come and not only hear, but see Srimad Bhagavatam in real life, associate with devotees, render service to the Lord, and develop a taste for chanting the holy name. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Narasimhadev Bhagavan ki jai. Ananti koti Vaishnav Brinda ki jai. Go Premanandi.